Sure. Wait, so it's definitely you need to run a Skype.
Thursday.
Oh, that's okay. So we're both a quick review of what we did yesterday. We saw a machlokes between Chacham Echad Mechachmei Adar and the Baal HaMo'or. And they were discussing the question of what we call Kikar Otinok. Can you take something that's mukta and in order to permit moving it, just simply lay something down on top of it? The Gemara actually tells us that although in the case of a mess, we're allowed to use this trick and place a kikar tinok, but that's only in the case of mess. So the Chacham Echad Mechachmei Adar says, let's not lose hope. Let's not throw in the towel. There is kikar tinok. It does exist, even beyond mess. There are two categories of mukta. One is the real mukta, which we call mukta machmas kufo, eitzim vavonim, and a mess fits into that category. Then we have what's called a klisha malachto le'isur. In the case of a klisha malachto le'isur, here kikar atinok will work, because what we do is we consider as if he's moving the kikar atinok, he's not moving the klisha malachto le'isur. So it comes out that according to the Chacham Echad, we very much have this principle, this possibility of kikar atinok is very much alive and well, and that in fact is going to be matir us to move a klisha malachto le'isur. His proof is from our Gemara here on Daf Kuf Chav Gimel. The Gemara says that if you have a madocha and it has a shum in it, then you're allowed to move the madocha agav the shum. On the other hand, the Baal HaMo'or says no. This principle of kikar tinok is not relevant. It doesn't apply. It was buried with the dead, if you pardon the pun here. You know, it's only a din in mess. When it comes to the mess, then you can use kikar tinok. There's no other heter of kikar tinok. The Gemara that we have about the shum, that's already a different discussion entirely. That has to do with changing or transforming the purpose of the kli. It no longer is a kli shemalakto le'isur, becomes a klisha malachto leheter. He compares it to the case of a pot that you use for cooking, and the food is in the pot, and you're allowed to move the pot, even though it's a klisha malachto leisur, because that's the purpose of heter. That's using it for a tzorech of heter. We spoke about different nafkaminas between the two shitas, and this was all on page Reish Mem Zion that we finished here yesterday. It was Os Aleph. And we'll quickly go over the two nafkaminas. He has a nafkamina in the case of taking something other than shum and putting it into the madocha. Would that also allow me to move the madocha? According to the Baal HaMo'or, no, because it's got to be the reassignment, redesignation of the kli, which we can only do if the kli is designated for the use of grinding and transporting the shum. But according to the shita of the Chacham Echad, you can just simply apply the principle of kikar tinok, and you can be matir tiltul of a kli shemalachto le'isur. There doesn't have to be any direct relation between the kikar of the tinok and the kli shemalachto le'isur. And then he has an afkamina legabe eino letzarech klal, meaning according to the Chacham Echad, he's moving the madocha for the sake of the ochel. When it comes to ochel, we don't have any limitations whatsoever. Mashenkin, according to the Baal HaMo'or, he's moving the kli, and with regard to moving a kli, we can only move a kli when it's litzorech, and if he moves it shelo litzorech klal, that's prohibited. That's what we got to yesterday. In Oz Beis here, he points out that there's a tshuva of the Rush, in which he brings these two shitos of the Chacham HaMatir. He identifies this anonymous Chacham as the Ravan, who is one of the members of the Rashi's family, and he quotes the shita of the Baal HaMo'or as well. And the Taz, that's a super commentary on Shulchan Aruch in Simon Shin Yud Aleph, he points out that there seems to be a contradiction between the Rush in his psakim and the Rush in his tshuvas. You know, the Rush wrote his super commentary on the Gemara, which is called Piskei HaRush. and he also wrote tshuvas which were responsive to questions that were addressed to him. In his psakim on Daf Kuf Mem Beis Amid Beis, which is Perek Notel, at the end of Masechta Shabbos Siman Beis, he quotes Rabbeinu Nisim, Mikana Tolomed Elu HaNoshim Shenoslim Kikar Al Gabi Menorah, people who want to move a lamp, which is certainly a klisha malachal isa, and they put a kikar, they put a piece of cookie on it, a piece of bread on it. Shedliku ba b'Shabbos u'betalten also mimakom l'makom ein osim yafe. They're not doing what they should be doing. Says the Taz, and here we're on the top of the left column. Tamua mi'ot. This is a pellet. This is something that we have to work out. There's a glitch here because the Rush in his Tshuvas quotes the Ravan, and as we said before, the Ravan allows the implementation of the trick, I call it, of Kikar o Tinok, that kunst. And if you have a lamp, therefore, then according to at least this Shita of the Chacham Echa, the Ravan, it would be mutter to put the kikar on top of the menorah. Let's read it inside. He says, "The klisha malachtalisa mutter l'talflo agav kikar otinok." According to the Ravan, this is on page Resh Mem Zion, top left column, we're on line 3. Maishno mi menorah shedliku ba b'Shabbos. Why shouldn't the Ravan and his kula of kikar otinok apply to the case where he lit this lamp before Shabbos, going into Shabbos? And the Gra, who the Vilna Gaon wrote a super commentary on Shulchan Aruch, in which he says regarding the question of Taz, "Umasha kosev lo omru kikar hainu b'dover shosel l'talto l'gamre v'ein tores kli olav v'ein taz shehisig al Shulchan Aruch b'siv zeh aval ein kushosel klum the menorah shedliku mukta machmas isu the dachya b'yadayim v'afilu tzal gufo osa hareyu kamo arniki." In other words, the Gra is establishing two different categories. There's a category of real mukta, we'll explain that in a minute, and then there's the category called klisha malachta l'isa. The difference is that a mukta gavur, a complete, total, genuine mukta, you're not allowed to move even litzar gufo. Whereas in the case of a klisha malachta l'isa, which is not mukta, you're allowed to move it litzar gufo. And what's the difference between the two? So a classical mukta would be the case of ner shed likubo or a menorah shed likubo, and that becomes mukta machmas isur. And the very moment that he lights the lamp, he is now docha b'yadayim. He's saying that I'm not going to go near this. I mean, it's a Shabbos. It's a light on Shabbos. It would be meleches mechaber to even tamper with it, and therefore becomes mukta gomur. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik says in the next paragraph. Anira levarba said the chiluk iser tiltul b'mukta iser tiltul b'kelim. The iser tiltul mukta who iser chefta. Okay, here he becomes a briska lamdin, you know, and that's where he comes from. And you know, Rav Soloveitchik was in his youth. He was brought up in a town called Chaslavich, but he used to very often visit Brisk to see his grandfather, who was the Rav in Brisk. There's an amazing story that when he was a youngster, Rav Soloveitchik had a notebook where he wrote his chidushin. And somehow, when he was visiting Brisk, Reb Chaim got a hold of the notebook somehow, and he took a look at it, and he couldn't believe it. And then when they told him it was little Yasha Ber, who was a youngster, he went wild. My father, Zichron Levracha, told me he saw a set of chumashim that the Rav received as a bar mitzvah gift from Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim died a year later after the Rav's bar mitzvah when the Rav was 14. And in the inscription, he writes to the Gadol Adar, as if there was no one like him. This is Reb Chaim Brisker. And Reb Chaim Brisker, you should know, had an amazing influence on the entire Derech HaLimud that we have. All the Gdolei Rosh Yeshiva were influenced by him. And he said about his grandson that he was a child and he was from the Gdolei. But the story I wanted to tell you is that when he came to Brisk, he was learning with his uncle. His uncle became the Rav of Brisk after his grandfather passed away. That was Rav Velvel. And when he was learning with Rav Velvel, they started fighting. I don't mean physically. They started arguing. And apparently it got a little out of hand. And the voices... So Rav Chaim was at the end of the hall. He starts running down the hall to see what's going on. And he sits down. And he asks the Brisker Rav to present his view. And Lili Yashaber, who's a boy, probably about 10 years old, to present his view. So Rav Chaim gets out of his seat and he says, Rav Velvel is gerecht. Rav Velvel is right. He goes back down the hall and then he starts running back to him. Nein, Yashaber is correct. I thought it over a second time and Yashaber is right. This is from Yashaber at the age of 10 years old. The Brisker, the Rav in Kovna wrote about him, Halacha Kamosa B'chol Makom. The Kovna Rav, his name was Shapiro. He wanted the Rav very badly as his son-in-law, but the Rav wasn't interested in the Shidduch for some reason. So he married Tanya Soloveitchik. But that was the Kovner Rav. He died in the Warsaw ghetto. He was not killed by the Nazis. He died before the Nazis got a chance to kill him because he died from a broken heart. I mean, we can't even imagine what was going on in the Warsaw ghetto. I mean, people were dying like flies in the streets. It's just beyond human comprehension. So he was totally brokenhearted. So that's the story over there. In any event, the Rav here is saying the following, that there's a fundamental difference between mukta and tiltul kelim. He says tiltul mukta is an iser chefta. Why? Because mukta changes the very status of the object. The object is mukta. It cannot be touched. It cannot be moved. It's out of our realm, out of our radar. It's inherently awesome. And therefore the Isur Chefta generates a Maisa Tiltum. In the case of Kalim, on the other hand, that's not an Isur Chefta. That's only an Isur Gavra, meaning the Isur is totally focused on the Maisa Tiltum. There's nothing inherently mukta about the object. And the Nafkamina is going to be, as far as Kikar Otinok is concerned. In the case of mukta, which is an Isur Chefta, there's no heter of Tiltum through Kikar Otinok. However, where does the Chacham Echad, which now we know is the Ravan, allow you to apply the principle of Kikar Tinok? That's only when there's no Chal Hashem Mukta. It's not an Isur Chefta. He says the following: the Klisha Malach Tol Isur. I'm skipping a few lines. He says, "Eino Mukta B'Chefta, Eino Lav Isur Ela, Eino Lav Isur B'Guf HaKli." Sharekli atzmo enel of Taurus mukta elu rak zeras isu tiltul kalim. Who isu al gavrishal al taltil klisha malachtol isu al kenk shu metaltil isu veheter yachad. Notice he puts a kikaratino according to the Ravan on top of the klisha malachtol isu. Then we're allowed to say that the maisa tiltul the gavr relates not just to the kli itself, but to also the kikaratino that's on top of the kli. That's the heter of kikaratino, according to the Ravan. And therefore, the Rush is absolutely correct when he writes in his Psakim, as we saw before, let's just go over it one more time. He says that Elu Anoshim Anosim Kikar Al Gabi Menorah Shedlikuba B'Shabbos is Einam Osim Yotha, because the Menorah Shedlikuba B'Shabbos is Mukta, that means it's an Isur Chefta. And if there's an Isur Chefta, then you're not allowed to move it because of the Chefta. The fact that you add a Kikar or Tinok, that's not enough to be Matir Mukta. You can't tell me that he's moving the Mukta Agav, the Kikar or Tinok, because even though the Tinok itself, or the Kikar itself, is Mutter in Tiltul, but nevertheless, the Chefta of Mukta is also.
Why is that not a Kushan Abdel Isur?
Oh, why is that not a klutza? So that's the concept. I don't know, Abby, were you here when we discussed Dechiyah B'Yadayim? I think you were here. Right? We discussed the concept called Dechiyah B'Yadayim. Dechiyah B'Yadayim means when I set up this object as being usur for me on Shabbos. I designated for an isur, in this case for Adloka, and I'm not allowed to tamper with it because of the malach of Kibui. When I go ahead and do that, I change the object. The isur is now inherent in the object. Correct. It's a chefetz shel mukta.
Okay.
Now, once we're on this topic, I wanted to take a little bit of a break, so to speak. You know, go off on a bit of a tangent, because, as I said before, we are learning two prakim simultaneously. We're learning Parakira, which is the parak of Bishul, and we're also learning Kol HaKelim, which is the parak of Kli Shel Malacha Le'Isur. So I wanted to jump back for a moment, because something last night caught my eye here that I wanted to share with you here in the Sefer Harei Kedem.
Hey, Rabbi Berzler?
Yeah.
Just before we leave the last point.
Yeah, please.
Half a minute. The...
I'll give you, Shmuel, a full minute, because you're one of my favorite guys. You know.
The part that said that this Iser, according to Rav Soloveitchik, was an Iser Gavra, is the basis for the Heter of the Ravan.
Okay.
And the part that said, the Svara, that said that it's an Iser Chefza, is the Bala Ma'or that users it.
Correct, but not only that, even if, this is the Kuntz, even if we take the Ravan, and even if the Rosh Paskins like the Ravan, which it sounds like in the Tshuvas, nevertheless, even the Ravan would agree that once you have a Mukta Gomor, a complete Mukta with an Isa Chefta, Kikar Atina doesn't help. The only case of Mukta Gomor where they allowed Kikar Atina is only the case of the mess, because of the urgent need to be Machab in the mess.
This also echoes what we learned about Balei Chaim. I always thought Balei Chaim are Muksa, but there's an opinion that it's only the only Isur is Isur Tiltol, but it's not necessarily Muksa. Does that not echo?
Well, let's just think. See, what gets complicated about Balei Chaim is that it's not like a Kli Shel Malacha Le'Isur, where the Kli itself is Mutter, but you can't use it for Isur, and it's designated for Isur. In the case of Balei Chaim, they made a separate Isur, the Chachomim, that any involvement with the Bal Chai is completely prohibited. You know, Balei Chaim in those days were used for all sorts of different Malachas of Shabbos, whether it's Harisha, whether it's Disha, whether it's Lisha even, you could do with the Bal Chai. All these Malachas are done, or Tochen with the Bal Chai. So the Rabbanu wanted to
Seda
with the Bal Chai. Well, yeah, that's sophisticated. You know, it's like I can send a dog to catch a deer, right? But anyway, I can use Balei Chaim in all sorts of ways and in many different contexts for Malachas of Shabbos and different Malachas of Shabbos. So there, the Rabbanon imposed on the Bal Chai an Isur. Don't have any contact with the Bal Chai. Once they've done so, then on top it becomes Mukta. It's not like the case of Kli Shel Malacha Le'Isur, where the Kli itself is Mutter, just that the Rabbana made a Gzeira of Tiltul because it's designated for Isur. There's no Isur in the object, but in the case of the Bal Chai, for another reason, which has nothing to do with the Chiya B'Yadayim, nothing to do with Mukta, it became a Chefza D'Isura, because the Rabbana made a Gzeira, they don't want you to have anything to do with the Bal Chai. We had another such example, but I can't remember what it is right now. Maybe it'll come back to me. So Rabbi said, let's take a quick vote here. When Svi comes back, it might be a split vote, but right now we have an odd number here. So that's why I said, Shmuel, when I said to you before that I'll give you a full minute, because you are one of the five favorite Talmidim I have in this place.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. You're in the top five. Which, by the way, in South Africa, that's very important. I learned from the South Africans. You know, this place is very South African. I feel out of it because I'm not South African. But South Africans told me there's something called the Big Five. Have you heard of that?
No.
No? All right. It's not relevant to us now, although it might be relevant to Ben's question about Balei Chaim, but we'll leave it out for now. What I wanted to share with you, but I need a vote, is a bit of a digression. You know, I don't necessarily always use this class for, for an opportunity to think out loud on a topic that I've been thinking about, like the night before. I don't usually do that. So the question is, let's take a quick vote. How many of you would want a little bit of a digression about something that I learned last night?
Go for it.
Okay, we'll go for it? Okay. There's a discussion here in Harei Kedem about Meleches Bishul, which fascinated my mind. Now, when I read it, I was half asleep. It was very late at night, about 1 in the morning, and I got up very early today. But I'm going to try my best. He quotes a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says the following, that you put the pot on the fire on Shabbos, and it cooked after Shabbos. And the Yerushalmi says, you violated Bishul. Now, this has to blow your mind. When did the Bishul take place?
After
Shabbos. Motzai Shabbat.
Motzai Shabbat.
You got the case. And let's say it's 5 in the afternoon.
On Shabbos.
I put the pot on the fire. Shabbos ends at 5:15. And it didn't cook until 5:30. I don't know, whatever the numbers are. Mm-hmm. The Yerushalmi says that's an Isur Bishul. And when I saw this, I just jumped out of my seat. I said, maybe the hour is very late tonight, and that's why I'm reading it wrong. But I read it again this morning, and that's what he says over here. Now, he says the following, that this is a klal gadol b'chol ha-melachos. She'imu asakein b'shabes v'malacha nimsheches mikocho v'nigmeres b'motzoi shabes u'chayev. So imagine what goes on over here. I plant a seed on Shabbos, but there's not enough time for the seed to take root. So when does it take root? After Shabbos, I'm chayev for that. I put a dough into the oven. There's not enough time before the end of Shabbos for it to bake. It bakes after Shabbos, and I'm chayev. How does that work? See, he says the following. This is Rav Soloveitchik's chiddush here. He says that every malacha has a maisa. The 39 right, categories, super categories. In the case of Bishul, what's the maisa? Putting the pot on the fire. He's going to be chayev for that. In the case of Zriya, the maisa is putting the zera into the ground. In the case of Afia, the maisa is placing the dough into the oven. He gives an example. He says, "Uheiniach basar gabi gecholim." He places on Shabbos meat on top of the coals. Is ikar ha-maisa hu ba-hanochal gabi gecholim? The maisa itself, for which you're chayev, is for placing the pot, or in this case the meat on the coals. Ha-bishul nase me'elof. The process of cooking, or afiyo, whatever the case may be, will happen on its own. But ha-nocha hu maisa ha-malocha. Shall Afia, shall Bishul, etc., etc. So he gives a case here from Hilchas Nazirus. You know, a Nazir is enjoined from cutting his hair. And what did he do in this case? He puts a sam on his head, some sort of a drug, right?
Nair,
I guess you call it, right? And humeshias asoyer. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Nazirus that he violates a lav d'oraisa, but he doesn't get malchus. Oh, obviously.
Sorry.
Shalom aleichem.
Better late than never, huh?
Yeah.
Javi, come and join us.
You're just in time for the most interesting part, Javi.
Yeah.
We're just getting
started. Now, why doesn't he get Malchus? He violated the law of Tiglachas. Abby, tell me, why doesn't he get Malchus?
Why doesn't he get Malchus?
He puts the drug on his head. And he violates the Isur Tiglachas because this drug, this chemical substance is going to cause a baldness in his head, rip out his hair. Why doesn't he get Malchus, the Rambam says, if he violates the law? Nobody's following me?
He's indirect. Venice.
No, because Malchus requires a Maisa. His Maisa was done when he put the drug on, the chemical on his head. But the actual removing of the hair happened me'elav, on its own. So Rav Soloveitchik wants to say that with regard to Tiglachas Nazir, the Iser is not complete when you put the drug on top of your hair, if you're a Nazir. But rather, the Iser is removing the hair, and that process took place me'elav. So on the one hand, he violates the law by setting up a process which is going to eventually create a bald spot on his head, but on the other hand, he's not going to get malchus because the aver itself, namely the removal of the hair, was done me'elav by itself, without a mice. But here, I want to get to the punchline. He says the following. The Igle Tal, right, we've quoted the Igle Tal on more than one occasion. He was the Sakach of Rebbe. He makes a distinction between two malachas of Shabbos, Zorea and Ofer. And he says the following. Zorea, when he plants the seed on Shabbos, and the seed doesn't take root until after Shabbos, he's chayev. But in the case of Afia, he's not going to be chayev unless the Afia takes place on Shabbos itself, which is against the Yerushalmi that we spoke about before. Because the Yerushalmi says that you put the pot on the fire on Shabbos, it didn't cook until after Shabbos, and you violate Melechus Bishul, according to the Igle Tal, no. Because the actual Bishul, what we call Befa'al, has to take place on Shabbos. Masha Enkein, in contrast, the case of Zriah, says the Igle Tal, in Zriah, you're chayev for simply Hanochas Hazera, for putting the seed in the ground. But in Afia, you're chayef, number one, for putting the dough in the oven, and number two, for the actual baking of the bread. And if the baking of the bread, which sets up the chiyuv, is going to happen after Shabbos, then you can't be chayef for that. In Zriya, I don't care when the hashrosha, when the rooting takes place, because you're chayef for what?
The seed.
For putting the seed in. That's the maisa. And he says the following, but what are we going to do with the Yerushalmi? The Igle Tal is wonderful, and he's a suit. Now, wait a minute. So where did the Igle Tal get this from? How does the Igle Tal know that the Chiyuv Afia is for A plus B, or the Chiyuv Bishul is A plus B? A, putting the pot on the fire, and B, the actual Bishul. And since your Chiyuv for Melechus Bishul, or Afia, is a hybrid, it requires two variables, they both have to take place when?
On Shabbos.
That's the Igle Tal. In Zriya, there's only one variable. Hanochas Hazera. But here, in the case of Bishul, there are two variables. Hanochas HaKder Al Gabi HaEsh. And number two, the actual Bishul. The Bishul before. Both, therefore, have to take place on Shabbos. How does he know that the Bishul itself has to take place on Shabbos? And that's what generates the Chiyuv. Why not say it's like Zriya, that the Hashrosha can take place after Shabbos? So what generates the Chiyuv and Afia and Bishul is just putting it on the fire, putting it in the oven. So he has a Gemara on Daf Dalet. Now we're learning Kira, and we thought all of Bishul is in Perikira. Now he goes back to the first Perik of Shabbos, and the Gemara asks the following question. Reuven went ahead on Shabbos and he placed a dough into the oven. And the Gemara wants to know, is Shimon allowed to remove the dough from the oven? That's called Rediyas Hapas. I'll write it on the board for you, Ben, Don, because that's a very important concept, Rediyas Hapas. Can Shimon do a Rediyas Hapas to remove it? To remove it from... Have you ever seen when they make pizza, you know, it's a whole to-do, how to take the pizza out of the oven? That's called Rediyas Hapas, right? And Rediyas Hapas...
Not quite the same, because they're the pizzas that... When they cooked here, they smacked the dough right onto the side wall of the oven and then peeled it off, but...
But what I'm just saying is that it takes a certain amount of expertise. Like if you put me in a pizza shop, you know, I don't know what the pizza would look like. You know what I mean? Even if it's on Derech Hevron and it tastes like Agvaniot or whatever it is. But Rediyas Hapas, the Gemara says, is a chachma. Chachma means it's like
skill.
A skill, excellent. Javi always has the right word for me. A skill. but it's not a malach. So Reuven is in a very tight situation. Why? Because he put the dough into the oven. If left untouched, he's going to violate a malachas bishul. Let's say he did it bishogeg, he's going to be chayav chatos. Shimon wants to know. Let's say Reuven is out of here. Shimon wants to know, is he allowed to do the Radias HaPas in order to save his friend Reuven from a violation of Malacha Shabbos?
Yes, because it's two different people doing two different variables.
But here, Don, you have to keep in mind that Radias HaPas, although it's not a Malacha, it's nevertheless prohibited on Shabbos. Like, let's say, for example, I put a dough into the oven on Erev Shabbos, right? Am I allowed to take the dough out of the oven on Shabbos through an act of Radias HaPas? No, I'm not allowed to do that. But here, what might justify the Radias HaPas is saving Ruve, my buddy, from violating a Malach of Shabbos. Because Radias HaPas, even though it's prohibited, it's not on the same level of Chumras HaVeira as Afia Malachas Shabbos. So the Gemara says the following. Again, very complicated sugya, which we're not going to go into, because I just want to get one point from this Gemara, of the Igli Tal, that Ein Omrim Li'odom Chatei Bishvil Shetizke Chavera. We never tell a person to violate an Avera for the sake of his friend. Okay, the Tosfos has about 15 exceptions to that rule. So, you know. But, okay, so now, says the Igli Tal, what good would it do if Shimon removes the pas from the oven and he does the Radia? Reuven already did the Malacha. What was the Malacha? Like in the case of Zriya, Malacha was putting the Zera into the ground. He put the dough into the oven. It's just like in Zriya, putting the Zera into the ground is the Malacha. So too, in the case of Afia, putting the dough into the oven is the Malacha Safia. Gomarno, he did the Malacha Safia. Says the Igli Tal, from the very fact that you see that Shimon could come along and save Reuven from the Malacha Safia by doing a Radias HaPas, it means that the baking of the bread, the actual Afia befall, is an integral, essential part of the Malach. So Rav Soloveitchik asks, what do we do with the Yerushalmi? The Yerushalmi says that you put the dough into the oven when?
Erev Shabbat.
Wait a minute. That's going already too far. If you put the dough in the oven on Erev Shabbat, you're okay. You're a tiny gomor. You might violate the Isur Shehiya if it's on an open fire, you know, and so forth and so forth. But you're okay. When did he put the dough into the oven? On Shabbos. When did it bake? On Motzei Shabbos. How could Yerushalmi say that he's chayav for such a thing when the afia took place after Shabbos, and now we've proven that afia is part and parcel of the chiyuv Shabbos? So listen to what Rav Soloveitchik says. You see how abstract the mind can get. He says the following. He says, afia hu maisa hamachayev, aval achiyuv tolu. I'm sorry, let me start again. What did I say? I don't remember what I said. Okay, let me say it again. He says the following, that the hanochas ha-tavshil ala-esh hi maisa ha-machayev. I'll explain. Avalachiyuv toli bitnai shel abishul. Okay? This is unbelievable. Okay. Now, if you'll accept what I'm about to say, then it was worth this digression for today was worth it. So let's see if I can convince you that there's something called a Maisa HaMachayev, and then there's something called Tnai Bachiv. Ben, can you tell me what I'm talking about here?
Masei Chayev is the act that will create a Chiyuv.
Great.
And the Tanai, I think, is the outcome.
The Tanai is a condition.
Condition.
Meaning, you may have done everything that you have to do in order to generate a view, but we need that actually. What do you say?
Actualize. It actually happens.
Correct. It actually happens. I call it actualize. Right. It's right. This actualization is a tnai. Now, what's the difference between A and B? The Yerushalmi says that A has to happen when? On Shabbos, David. Everybody does it every Shabbos, is that relevant, right? But B could take place when?
Even
after Shabbat. So, for example, what would be in the following scenario? I'm just going to test you to see if you're following my logic. On Shabbos, Reuven puts a seed into the ground. On Sunday, before the seed takes root, he or somebody else comes along and uproots the seed, and it never got a chance to take root. Would he be chayav or not?
Yes.
No. Because the hashrosh is a tnai bechir. Do you follow what I'm saying? Here too also, the man put the dough into the oven. He's going to be chayav for that, but only on one condition, that it bakes. And that baking is just a condition. That condition could be fulfilled, could be implemented even after Shabbos. So it comes out like this. According to the Igli Tal, there are two variables that combine to generate Melechas Hafi or Melechas Bishul. Number one is the Hanocha, which is the active element. And number two is the passive element of the Afiyah or the Bishul. Both together form a Melecha of Shabbos. Melechas Bishul, Melechas Hafiyah. Therefore, says the Igli Tal, both A and B have to take place on Shabbos. Kamzul Yerushalmi says, no. The Chiyuv is made up of only one element. It's not A plus B. It's simply putting the dough into the oven. But there's a tnai, an extraneous or external condition that has to be fulfilled. The Afiyah has to realize itself in the real world. But that can take place after Shabbos. So it means that according to the Yerushalmi, when the Gemara says that Shimon wants to come along, offer himself as a sacrifice to do the Rediyas HaPas and thereby save Reuven from violating Melechas Hafiyah, that makes sense according to the Yerushalmi, because that removes the kiyum of what? Of this tnai. And if there won't be any Hafiyah because he'll take the dough out of the oven before it bakes, then for sure Reuven's not going to be chayv. Shimon wants to offer himself to save Reuven. According to Igli Tal, the Gemara is saying something totally different. The Gemara is saying that when Reuven takes the dough out of the oven, then the machayev of when Shimon takes the dough out of the oven, then the machayev of Reuven is gone, because the machayev of Reuven has to be a combination and integration of both A plus B, namely the Hanocha Sapas Latoch, Achnosa Sapas Latoch HaTanur, and number two, the actual Afir. And since the Afiyah did not take place, therefore the Machayev is not there. So the difference between the Sheet of the Igli Tal and the Sheet of the Yerushalmi is a fantastic machlokas here, nafkamina gdola. What happens if the Afiyah took place after Shabbos? If I claim that the Afiyah is part of the Machayev, as the Igli Tal would claim, so you need both the Hadbaka Sapas Lutokatan plus the Afiyah, then everything has to take place on Shabbos. But if you would claim that the Afiyah itself is only a Tanai, that could take place even after Shabbos, hence the Yerushalmi. That's what I wanted to share with you. How many people... No, I'm afraid to ask you. How many people followed me?
But so, according to the Igli Tal, you asked this question.
Excuse me, I know you, but I don't know.
Sorry, I apologize. I'm Harvey's son, Jeremy.
Jeremy, okay.
Jeremy Brown.
Jeremy has yichus.
I do.
I don't know his own yichus, but I know his yichus from his father. Yeah.
So according to the Igli Tal, I just want to make sure I've got this. Putting a seed down on Shabbat and removing it on Sunday doesn't help.
It does help. Why? Because there's a tnai in the Chiyuv of Zriya that the Hashrasha take place. Well,
so then you just wait until you see a seed. You could keep it Monday, you could keep it Tuesday.
Yeah, it takes, let's say, 72 hours, as long as it
takes. So how long are we talking about for the Rediyas HaPas to take place after the Reuven put it in?
I would say about 10 minutes, maybe.
You don't think it's cooked by 10 minutes? You
don't
think
5 minutes? I don't know, whatever you want to say.
Just to be clear.
Achi Karmupanea.
Yeah, it's called Achi Karmupanea.
But just to be clear, he's removing it before the baking has...
Correct, before the Kriyas HaPas. And that 5-minute slot.
Okay, so it's two different. Okay.
So in other words, the paradigm for Afiyah, the paradigm for Afiyah, according to the Yerushalmi, is going to be Zriya. Just like in Zriya, there's one element for which you're chayav, namely the actual Hanochas HaZera, and the Hashrosha itself is only a Tanai. So too, in Afiyah, there's only one element, and that's Hanochas HaHachnosas HaPasal Tochatan. That's the Machayav. But we have a Tanai that the Afiyah has to take place. If at any point you can undo the Afiyah before it materializes itself, during that small, short, 5-minute interval, then there's no Chiv, because the Tanai never came to realization. And in Zriya the same. If you can remove the Zera before the actual Ashrosha, then you're not chayav for the Zriya.
So he's taking out the uncooked dough, the Ridus HaPat.
Correct.
So is that technically the same as taking out a nice cooked piece of dough, which is real?
I think, if I remember correctly, again you have to go through the sugya of Ridus HaPat. What the Ridia accomplishes is that if it's fully baked, it won't get, you know, mushed around, you know, won't get crumpled up. And if it's not fully baked, you'll be able to put it back in again the second time. So there's a chachma here in Ridias HaPas. But again, keep
that's
in mind, all in Issa Derabbanan. It's what we call a shvus. Not only is it a shvus, it's a gzera Derabbanan. You know, because you start playing around with Ridias HaPas, then tomorrow maybe you'll do Hachnasas HaPas. But I just want to point out, this is very crucial for me. In the Igle Tal's frame of reference, it's not true that Zriya becomes the paradigm for Afiyah. Because whereas in Zriya, the actual Ashrosha is nothing more than a Tanai, in the case of Afiyah, the actual Bishul is part of the Machayev itself. It's integral and essential to the to generate the Chiv. And the Nafkamina is that whereas Zriya, the Ashrosha can take place after Shabbos, the Tal insists that the Afiyah has to take place on Shabbos.
And how does he differentiate? Why does he differentiate between Zriya and Afiyah?
I'll tell you why, because I think he feels that there's no way that the actual Ashrosha could be part of the Machayev in the case of Zriya. The Gemara assumes in a number of places of Shas, especially in the Sugya Menachos of baking a mincha, that and the Gemara there talks about the Omer, right? It's on Samach Ches, I think, the Sugya of the Omer, and the Sugya of the Omer revolves around what's called Hashrosha. Okay, this is a long discussion, but I'll just say very quickly. And Don, don't pay attention to anything I'm saying now because it's just going to confuse you. But it works like this, Don. If
I think I've been demoted.
No, because you have to know so much here. I'm just going to say it in a little. I hope it'll bounce off you, because if you can start thinking about it, when it comes to Chadosh, the Issa Chadosh depends on Ashrosha. That means that if I put a seed down before Tetzayin B'Nisan, if the Ashrosha took place after Tetzayin B'Nisan, it's still Chadosh, even though it was planted before Tetzayin B'Nisan, which should have made it into Yosha. And in that sugi, the Gemara says the Ashrosha usually takes 72 hours. So the Igle Tal is stuck with a... this I want you to hear, Don, very much. This is the paradox of Melech HaZriya. If Hashrasha is an integral part of Zriya, there's no way, no how, under the sun, that you could be violating the Melech of Zriya. There may be one case of one Zera that has Hashrasha within 24 hours. So if you do the Zriya after Shkia Sacham on Friday night, you might get to Hashrasha before Shkia Sacham. But as a general rule, Hashrasha takes a minimum of 72 hours. You have to be a botanist for this, but that's the Gemara assumes. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. I was absolutely fascinated by this.
Where is this in the Hara and Kedah?
No, this is... I just closed it, which is...
Oh, sorry.
No, wait a minute. Maybe it's still open. Yeah, it's still open. Simon Zion. It's called Bedin Hidbik Paspitano. Very cool. Okay. So now let's get back to Kuf Chav Gimel. Harvey, do you have your Gemara?
No.
It's behind you. I put it there myself on the bottom.
Yeah?
No, it's Jerry, a little bit further up. We're near where your father's looking. It's a long Gemara. It's like 12 feet long. No, just kidding.
This one?
Yeah, that's it. But the question is if he has the right volume, but that's a different
Which stuff?
So we're on Kuf Chav Gimel, 123.
No,
it's not. No, so it's maybe the second. Yeah, I think he has the other volume there too. Okay.
Okay. It's probably time to say goodbye to this cover.
Okay, so let's see if we can find the place here on Kuf Chav Gimel.
Yeah.
Amud Aleph. And we're on the second line from the top. The first word in the line in the standard Bavli, I don't know what it is in Steinsatz, is Esve. You have such a thing, Esve?
Yeah.
You got it?
Esve Abayi L'Rav.
Excellent. Esve Abayi L'Rav. Now, Rava just finished telling us that a klisha malakta le'isa, you're allowed to move it litzarech gufo. And now we have a question from Abaye, because the Braisa seems to contradict Rava. What does it say in the Braisa? Midocha im yeshba shum metaltino, so vim lav e metaltino. So you have this grinder, and you took a piece of garlic and you put it in the grinder, you grind it up, and the shum is still there. He hasn't yet siphoned it off and put it into his plate or his package or whatever it is. We called it yesterday a lock and lock. Okay. So then he's allowed to move the madocha. But if there's no garlic in the grinder, now this is a question on Rava, because according to Rava, the status of madocha, of this grinder, is a klisha malachto le'isur. And if it's a klisha malachto le'isur, you're allowed to move it litzarech gufo. So let's say, for example, you know, they had a massive maducha. It was really a piece of metal. And Chazal assumed that if he wants to find a stool to climb up to a higher place, he can stand on the maducha. So he has now a kitchen shayish, and he has his maducha on the shayish, and now he has over here a closet. He wants to get to high class, so he wants to move the maducha. So the Braisa says he can only do so if and when he has shum in the madocha. According to Rava, he should always be allowed to move the madocha, because that's called klisha malachta le'isur, mutta le'talta le'tzorek gufo. So Rava answers Abai's question by saying that this braisa is the unique, it represents the unique shita of Rabbi Nechemiah. Ha Mani, who's the author of this? Braisa, Rabbi Nechemiah, he, di Omar, ein kli nital el litzorech tashmisho. Which means that Rabbi Nechemiah has a very limited heter for moving kelim. You know, we've discussed on many occasions that kelim, you know, there's like almost a carte blanche heter, move kelim this way, move kelim that way. As long as there's some tzorech, as long as you're doing it for some purpose, as opposed to the case of shalom litzorech klal, you're allowed to move kelim. Yeah, but that's because we reject the shita of Rav Nechemiah. So we're not used to Rav Nechemiah. Rav Nechemiah himself holds that we're not so liberal about allowing you to move kelim. Because once you start moving kelim, it could change the whole nature of Shabbos, and maybe you'll carry a keli out into Rosh Hashanah. So what they said is, you're only allowed to move kelim in a very restricted permission. And what's the restricted permission? It's got to be litzorech tashmisho. What does that word tashmisho mean? Hamiyuchadlo. Every kli has its designation. It has its function. And we're not going to allow you for secondary functions. We're only interested in the primary function. And when you need the kli for a primary function, bless you, then you're allowed to move the kli, according to Reb Nechemiah. The primary function of a madocha is for grinding. It has a secondary function in which you can use it for other things, like we spoke about using it as a stepping stone. But for using it as a stepping stone, even though it's Latzor Gufo, Rabbi Nechemiah prohibits it, because that's not Tashmisho Hamiyuchad Lo. So let's write this on the board, because this is the new concept here of Rabbi Nechemiah. We need Tashmisho Hamiyuchad Lo.
So that would only apply to Kalem Shemalach.
Well, yes, because if it's a Kli Shemalach
Isur, it's Tashmish is awesome.
It's awesome, right? But now we have a Kli Shemalach Heter, and I want to use it for that Heter, so I'm allowed to. But if I want to use it for something other than that, okay. Now let's go with the Baal Amor, Abby. The Baal Amor, if you recall, says that if there's shum inside the madocha, then we transform the identity of the kli into what?
Carrying.
A kli shemalach leheter. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take, for example, the Balamar's opinion in Rabba. In Rabba's frame of reference, you have a Madocho, which is a classical cliche, Malafto Lid Isur. But if you have Shum inside, it becomes a cliche, Malafto Lehet. Good. So now I have a cliche, Malafto Lehet. Can I use it as a stepping stone? According to Rabba, the answer is yes. According to the Brisa, the answer is no. So Abai posits this contradiction from a Brisa to Rabba, and the answer is that this Brisa reflects the Shita of Rav Nechemya. Rav Nechemya says there's no Hetel Tzorach Gufo, it's only a Hetel Tzorach Tashmisho Hamiyuchad Lo. And in the case of Madocha, Madocha is not a stepping stone. Madocha is a grinder. And if you want to use it for grinding, let's say, for example, I would find a het on Yontif to use it as a for grinding. It's a whole big issue on Yontif if you're allowed to grind things on Yontif. I'm not getting into that now, because for that we'd have to learn Masechta Beitza. So I'm not responsible for Masechta Beitza. Halavai should be responsible for Masechta Shabbos. So in any event, let's say you were allowed to grind something. So you could. So Rav Nechemya would say use the grinder as a grinder for grinding. But if you want to use it as a stepping stone, that's not Tashmisha Miyuchadlo. And that scope, that extended scope of heta tiltal, was not accepted by Rav Nechemya. He was very restrictive, very limited about how and when you're allowed to be metaltal a kli. It's got to be for the sake of Tashmisho Hamiyuchah. All right, now we get to Beisil and Beit Shammai. Esvei, I think I spoke too soon. I told you I'm not learning Masechta Beitza, but actually I am learning Masechta Beitza because the next Gemara is really just a graft from Masechta Beitza. Now, you may have, as I do in your Gemara, parentheses. Do you have parentheses here?
Yeah.
Okay, so when there are the parentheses, you never know whether to read it or not to read it. We'll take advantage of it and we'll read it. It says here like that, like this. This is a Mishnah in Masechta Beitza. Beis Shammai Omrim, Ein notlin es ha'eli lekatzev olav basar. No, the Steinsons have a picture here. He's very good at pictures. No, not in this case. Sometimes he has illustrations of what's going on in the Gemara. All right. So in any event, there's something called an ali. Okay, and an ali is called, according to Rashi, Yad shall eitz gadol viagol shemakim bo sachitim shebemachteshes. So it means there's a certain kind of a wooden vessel, a utensil that's used. It's a very large utensil, very wide and round. And Rashi says they used to use it in order to smash the wheat and begin the process of separating the chaff from the wheat. And now, this very wide, round wooden utensil, which is designated for what's called meleches ketisha, which means grinding, he wants to use it as a we would call it maybe a challah tray. No, what do you, a challah board, a cutting board, right? So he wants to use it as a cutting board. In this case, he wants to cut his meat on top of this on this ali. And Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to do so. Why? If you hold like Rav Nechemya, it fits very well, because you can only use a kli for the sake of Tashma Shamiyuchad Lo. And the Tashma Shamiyuchad here is Ketisha. Right? It's used for banging the wheat. It's not used for a flat plate for cutting your meat. Ubeisilel matir. Beisil allow it. And there were two ways of learning this. Either Beisil allows it because he holds that even if it's a cliche malakta l'isi, you're allowed to use it with tzorech gufo. That would reflect the shita of Rabba. Or alternatively, Beisil actually accepts the shita of Rav Nechemya, and therefore it should technically be prohibited to use this for another tashmish, as your flatboard for cutting your meat. But we allow it on Yontif. And the reason for that is because on Yontif there's a mitzvah of what? Of Simchas Yontif. Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar. So for the sake of preparing your meat, we're going to allow you to use this kli. But under normal circumstances, you would not be allowed to use it. And now the Mishnah says, V'shavin, meaning there's no machlokus between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, She'im katzav olav basar, she'asur l'taltala. Meaning after he completes the process of cutting his meat on this Eli, which according to Beis Hillel he was allowed to do, but from that moment on, Beis Hillel would say, you're not allowed to move the Kli. Why? Because it's a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser. Now, for the fact that he says Osel L'Taltalo without any qualifications, it sounds like it's Osel L'Taltalo even L'Tzarech L'Tzarech Gufo. So now we have a case of a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser, which you're not allowed to move L'Tzarech Gufo. He allowed you to move it for the sake of cutting the meat. Why did he do that? Apparently, because of Yontif, because of Simchas Yontif. But now he finished cutting his meat. He's ready to put the meat on the fire and prepare his Sudas Yontif. There's no longer an urgent need to allow him to cut his meat on this pan. So now we're stuck with a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser. And Beis Hillel say also L'Taltalo. It sounds like that's a flat, absolute, all-inclusive Iser. According to Rabbah, that's not really true. In a case of a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser, you're allowed to move it L'Tzarech Gufo. So this now is a second question of Abaye directed at Rabbah. In other words, Abaye would not ask a kasha from Beit Shammai because we paskin in the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel like whom? Yeah, sure. Like Beis Hillel. But here we have a kasha from Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel agreed that once you finish the act of cutting up your meat, you can no longer move this Eli. Obviously, he's holding that a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser is also betiltul, even L'Tzarech Gufo. So the Gemara answers, Savar L'Shnuyei Le'i K'Rabbi Nechemya. That initially, the thought crossed the mind of Rabbah that the answer he should give to Abaye is that this is the shita of Rav Nechemya. Yeah, but it's a little bit difficult to say that the shita Beis Hillel reflects Rav Nechemya, because we paskin like Beis Hillel, and we don't paskin like Rav Nechemya. For sure, Rabbah doesn't accept Rav Nechemya, because Rabbah says you're allowed to move a Kli for the sake of Gufo, and Rav Nechemya says you're only allowed to move a Kli for the sake of Tashmisho Amiyuchadlo. So this is so far a little bit shaky here, you know, to interpret that Mishnah of Beis Hillel according to Rav Nechemya. That's really a dochak gadol. That's really if you're very, very desperate. So kevan deshama la leha di amrav chinina bar shloimi mishmei derav. Now he's going to offer a different answer, Rabbah, to Abai's question, based on a statement that he heard from Rav Chinin on the name of Rav. What was the statement in the name of Rav? He says the following: Hakol, meaning everybody agrees, even those who disagree with Rav Nechemya, modim besiche or sike. Okay, now these, what we're about to learn is the three different types of utensils that are used in either dyeing, right, D-Y-E, dyeing process, or perhaps in preparing wheat in the farming industry. These are very heavy-duty industrial vessels or utensils.
Processing.
Yeah, like for example, Harvey, I always ask you this question, what is that pick? You know, that the dentists use, you know, to, like, if you have a little piece of a filling, you know, and you want to get at it, you know, those very thin kind of utensils, what are they called? Do you remember from your old days as a dentist?
Is it called a dental pick? I don't
know. Maybe it's called a dental pick?
Yeah.
I remember as soon as the dentist picked that up, I got scared, you know, because he didn't give me any Novocaine for that, you know. Okay, so these are very sensitive, expensive utensils, and they're called Sike, Zaire, Umizore, these three. They're all Aramaic words, we'll see what they mean. He says, Kaven the Kapet Alayhu, because the professionals are very careful about this. They don't want it to get rubbed out or misused. Is Miyachid Lumakom, so they lock it up in a certain closet, so no one should get access to it. Is therefore, these are Asur, even L'Tzarech Gufo. even if you want to move it for the sake of using it, I don't know for what, but let's say for some sort of heter, you're not allowed to use it. That's called what? Who remembers what we call this? We discussed in the past. Chisaron kiss. Excellent. Chisaron kiss. Chisaron kiss means something that's so sensitive and so expensive that you lock it up. And even those who disagree with Rav Nechemya, and they have a much more permissive view of moving Kalim, but there's a red line, and you can't cross the red line. And what is that red line? If you have Kalim, which is so sensitive and expensive that you lock it up, that's called Kavod Alayhu, Umiyachid Lo Makom. In such a case, you're not allowed to move them at all. They became Muktza Mamsh. You know, this is like the Heftza Disura of Muktza that we discussed earlier. Hani Nami, this Ali that we were speaking about before, that's used in the context of grinding, Miyachid Lo Makom. It's also a very significant and expensive kli, and this utensil is locked up and you designate a special place, and therefore it's prohibited in Tiltul, even with Tzarech Gufo, because it's Muktza Mamsh. Now, what are these three kelim, which become now the paradigms of Muktza Machmas Chisaron Kis, Sike Zaire Umizore? So in my Gemara, he has a little bit of a picture of it. And these, according to one opinion, are kalim that are not used by the dyers, but rather used by the weavers. So he has a whole picture here of all the different parts of a weaving machine. And the CK are the vertical poles, so to speak, and the weaving utensil is attached on both sides to these poles, so that's called the sike. And then he has a picture of Mizore, and then he has a picture of Zaire. So anyone who wants to, I guess we can photocopy this if you like.
I think they might be on the photocopies already.
Oh yeah, you have the photocopy? Yeah. Can you pass it around?
Is this correct?
If it's got the picture, it's this one. But you have an extra ribbon on it, I see. Okay, the ribbon, you should know, is not a klisha malach l'isa. And it's certainly not muktza machmas chisaron kis.
I think I passed this one out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to give Harvey a copy? Does Harvey got a copy ready?
Not sure, but here's another one.
He probably got a copy. Let's see if it's on the table. Oh, here it is. All right, so... All right, so you have an illustrated Mesifta picture of these kelim. So, Rabosa, let's just summarize, and then we'll call it a morning. We have three categories of Isur Tiltul and three different shitos. We have the shita of Rabba. Rabba's shita is that a klisha malachta l'isur is mutal l'tzorach gufo. Then we have the second category, which is called a kli. She makpid aleihu umiyachid lamakom. It's muktza machmas chisaron kis, and even Rabba would agree that you're not allowed to move such a kli litzorach gufo. Now we're adding Eli into that list, and then we have the shita of Rav Nechemya. He's of the opinion that even in the case of a kli shemalachta leheter, you're not allowed to move it unless for the sake of tzorech tashmisho hamiyuchad lo. In the middle of all these different shitas, we have the comment of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai hold that in a muktza machmas chisaron kis, like the case of Eli, we're not going to allow you to move it even for the sake of simchas yontif. That's how strict we're going to be about muktza. And this is a fascinating question unto itself. Under what conditions can we allow moving muktza on Shabbos? I'll give you three examples. For example, number one, a chole. Now, when I speak about a chole, I'm not talking about a chole sheyesh bo sakana, because in that case, if he's in danger, then you could do anything, any malacha. But we're talking about a chole sheein bo sakana. And in case of a chole sheein bo sakana, we're allowed to violate what's called a gzera derabbanan of Shabbos for the sake of the chole. So, for example, we're going to allow moving muktza if need be for the sake of a chole. And that's because mukta is a gzera derabbanan on Shabbos. Then we can talk about moving Muktzah during what's called Tosefa Shabbos. Let's say, for example, it's Motzei Shabbos, the three stars are out, it's already past Seisa Kochot, but I haven't yet recited Havdalah, because I want to extend the Shabbos even beyond. If you go to a Chassidus Shetish, you know, a Shal Shudis, it'll go till the wee hours of the morning, till they finally make Havdalah. So during that period of time, which is called Tosefa Shabbos, I would be allowed to violate, it's not a violation, but would normally would be a violation of a Gzeira Drabbanan on Shabbos. So therefore I would be allowed to move Mukta during that period of time of Tosefa Shabbos. And the third Nafkamina would be in the case of what's called Bein Hashmashos. That means the sun set on Friday afternoon, Friday evening, but the stars have not yet come out. During that twilight period of time, we have a kind of a suffix. We don't know if it already is Shabbos, if it's not Shabbos, so we're not going to do malachas. But Gzeiras Darabanan they allowed even during Bein Hashmashos. So during that period of time, you'd be allowed to move, Muktzah. And all this is based on the Shita that we have here of Beis Hillel. That Beis Hillel says that there are certain situations in which for a pressing need we're allowing you to move Muktzah. And one of those situations is called Simchas Yontif. Beit Shammai, on the other hand, are very, very tight. Yeah, very makpid. They're not going to loosen the grip here on Muktzah. And they'll be very restrictive. And even for the sake of Simchas Yontif, to cut up your meat and prepare it, we're not going to allow you to violate the Easter Muktzah in the case of Sifi, Zairi, and Eli, all these Kalim which are Kevin Shemakpid Alayu. Is miyachid lo makom? It's a mukta machmas chisaron kiss. It'd be interesting to wonder, according to Beit Shammai, would we be allowed to move books in the case of a chol? Would we be allowed to move books in the case of Tosefta Shabbos or Bein Hashmashos? And as a general rule, you know, the poskim have what I call the abstract halacha. And then when it comes to the practicality, they get very, very nervous. You know what I mean? So you might find certain heterim in the books, but Lamaisa, I'll give you a funny example that we spoke about yesterday in a different shiur. It's unbelievable. The Shulchan Aruch has a discussion about music on Shabbos. You're not allowed to make music on Shabbos. And he wants to know, In the old days, they used to very often have weddings on Friday. Why did they have weddings on Friday? It doesn't seem like a timely time for a chasana.
The food could be used for Shabbos.
Exactly. They would save themselves all the money that they needed to make a festive meal for the first Suda after the Chuppah, the Suda's Nesu'in, by combining it with Shabbos. Now, I don't know why that's a problem of Chavilas, but anyway, so you're allowed to do that. And now they need music, because how could you have a Sudas Nesu'in, a marriage, without music? So the Shulchan Aruch says, have a guy make the music. Could you imagine? It's Friday night, and all the Jews with the long beards and payas are sitting around, you know, with the chassid kala, you know, the chassid has a strimal on, you know, everything else. Have you ever been to a chassidish wedding? And there's a goyish band playing music. And why is this so? Because since this is only a gzera drabanan of making music, and on top of it you had a guy make the music, that becomes what's called a shvus to shvus, and you're doing it b'makom mitzvah for the sake of the suit, therefore it's allowed. That's one of those heterim which you can't even begin to imagine halach l'maisa. That's why I say that sometimes, you know, they have the halach in theory, in abstract, but the l'maisa doesn't come out that way. So I would say the following: for the sake of a mitzvah, Beis Hillel will allow you to move Muktzah, and that's the case of Simchas Yontif that we have here. Beit Shammai would prohibit. Okay, then, so we'll call it a morning today. And I know it looks like it's very late, 11 o'clock, but we started late. So,
you're thinking
tomorrow back to regular time? Okay, 9:30.
You're thinking today they have such a wedding on a Friday night with the music?
No, I don't think so. It's just theoretical. It's on the books.
Can you imagine?
You
know, like,
if you want to keep it,
marry the next day. You know?
My daughter got married on a Friday, but the wedding didn't last that long.
It's a big thing.
Well, what do you mean it didn't last that long? You mean the food that was on Friday?
Friday night.
So you didn't gain anything financially?
Wow. Not really. Leftovers.
Well, where was it? The Old City?
Yes.
Because I saw very often in the Old City on Friday, I saw weddings.
Yeah.
If you're walking through the Old City, it's not uncommon that you'll smack up to the whole...
I went to a wedding last night, and the groom was Ethiopian, so it was a very mixed wedding. And I found a rabbi who was born in America. He's an Ashkenazi rabbi, but he married to an Ethiopian, and he's apparently the rabbi of the Ethiopian community in Bat Yam. And he did the ceremony in three languages: Hebrew, English, and
Amhara.
And then after he did the traditional Ashkenazi, they had three rebbeim from the Ethiopian community, and they did a thing. It was one of the best weddings I've been in about 10 years. I mean, it was really special.
I would have gone to just that I wasn't invited. The technicality, but what was the dancing like? African dancing?
A little bit, but not.
Because I was at a wedding once, and it was an Ethiopian girl with a Sephardi boy, mm-hmm. and the dancing, all the ladies came out with the African garb.
Yeah, you know? They're
jumping around. I felt like I was back in Ethiopia.
What are you doing now?
Now we're learning a sugya called Meleches Choresh. So I have for you on the bima a page of Mar Makomos.